Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way. That's Lindsay Sheridan's music. What's she doing?
Oh my God.
What's she doing here? With a steel chair. She's clearing out the whole back room. It's chaos.
I just stumbled in here and came out fighting. That's right.
That is your brand. You just enter rooms and just clear them out with like a wooden 2x4. You just take people out. Hacksaw Jim Duggan style.
You know, I would go with something more like with my, you know, sharp wit and observation powers. But yeah, we can go with the physicality of.
How would you clear a room with your observation powers? How would that happen?
Know,
how would you do that?
I don't know.
How would you do that? I get the sharp wit part. You can make people like feel a way, but I'm just trying to figure out with your observation, how would that work?
I don't know. I don't have the perfect answer for that.
Welcome to another edition. And if it's a special edition, you're right. It is special because we've got in the room with us joining the Imagine This Podcast team.
The only.
One who needs no introduction in the Western civilized world. The master of disaster. The one who puts the Continental in Connell Divide. I don't know where they came from. I'm just making stuff up.
For me, yeah.
That's getting niche. Lindsay, welcome aboard this rocket that is Imagine This Podcast.
Thanks. Thank you for letting me on your ticket. I think we really...
we're balancing out the ticket, Lindsay. We're balancing out the ticket.
We needed a little bit more, I think, I don't know,
command.
Non-aging
we needed
energy.
More Clifton Strings command. More Clifton Strings command function in this. A little too much ideation, a little too much visioning and connecting. We actually need people to get things done. And they're like, well, we got to book a Lindsay. You got to get Lindsay on the show. So that's right. The network executive said, you got to pump it up. And we're so glad to have Lindsay Sheridan join us. And we'll be part of our weekly pods as co-hosting and co-producing. So Lindsay, welcome.
Right. Thank you. Well, glad to be here. You know, I had a podcast of my own. People can still go back and listen to those episodes, Arts Forward MKE, but this is going to be my podcast home moving forward.
Do we remember the decision of what happened when we were like, hey, we should make some audio content with the artists in the 414 day video? It seemed like that was supposed to land in this podcast. And then I think there was something about like you hated our intro music and you're like, screw you guys, I'm just going to make...
I'm going off on my own. You braided like a stick and bindle, like those hobos. And then you went to ride the rails, like the journey of Natty Gann. You went to ride the rails.
I remember it differently, but we can go with that.
You like extended a middle finger to all of us and like kicked the door down. Like, I'm out of here. And then went to a different room to record Arts Forward MK, which was really good. But, you know, the reality is we all have day jobs and it's really hard to maintain this level of production. And so we want to say, let's keep Lindsay talking artists and arts admins, and we'll just keep it here. We'll bolster this spot. So we're glad to have you here.
Now's my chance. I can finally make a piano cover of Tropical House Beats, the intro music.
Yes!
I can't, this is, you've heard it here, ladies and gentlemen. Lindsay Sheridan's cover of Tropical House Beats is coming to our intro music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
After we do this opening banter, stay tuned for Bryce Lord, who is from the Helen Bader Institute for Nonprofit Management. He's going to be our main interview at the back end of this. But we're in the opening bit here, just getting centered here. So we're centering you, audience member, to our new teammate here in this. And that means, David, you are going to occasionally be Super Producer David now. You won't be Host David, but Super Producer David.
I'll be Super Producer David, that's right, as opposed to just marginal okay co-host David.
You should really stop reading the feedback forms, David, and taking them because I fill out half of them. So that was probably mine I planted. Lindsay, as you're saying.
You know, before we get into the interview with Bryce, we have to know something important. As we're recording this today, is MacArthur Antigua's birthday.
Oh my God.
Can you believe it? Another year around the sun. How do you feel, Mac?
Woo, thank God I made it to 32, 14th consecutive years. So I made it to age 32. It's good. It's great to be 46. What a time to be alive, as my daughters like to say. What a time to be
Wait, alive. Lindsay, is that Barry Horowitz's music? What's he doing here?
Hey, Mac, Mr. Technical here, Barry Horowitz. You know, the real technical pro wrestler.
Yes.
That's technically speaking, by the way.
Barry Horowitz.
We've got a lot to address here. Let's address your big birthday bash. happy birthday. You get the big golden pat on the back. I'm glad it's your birthday. I hope you have a great one. Heard you have a successful podcast. You're a co-host, and you're technically sound. We what the frig? We know that's not true. You're not technically sound. You sit there as a co-host, yes. You read the little jabroni paper, yes. And do your little jabroni work, okay? Yes. You know who's technical? Me!
What a great, by the way, everyone at home, this is telling you what it means to work at Imagine. So if you want to know like what's it like to work at Imagine, this gift will pretty much tell you.
When I saw that Barry Horowitz was on Cameo, it occurred to me, it was so natural, right, that for the world's greatest sort of quote-unquote enhancement talent that Barry Horowitz was, you do the same thing for us. You make
I'm
us
an enhancement
look good
talent.
Too.
I exactly. I'm the equivalent of an enhancement
You make
talent
us look here. Good too every
That's right.
day.
I take the falls. I take the bumps. That's right.
And so, for those of you who don't know, right, Barry Horowitz was just the WWF's jobber to the stars. He would lose to everybody, but because he was such a good wrestler, make everybody look great. And he had the world's longest losing streak, except the time he beat Spike at apparently the Bradley Center at a house show.
Like the Milwaukee
here in Milwaukee.
I like that he called me a jabroni. I like that he called me all the terms. I think he called me a mook. He gave me all the carny terms for loser. And it's like getting roasted by Don Rickles. It's just like it's a dream. So thank you. And thank you there, listeners, also for listening to that and enduring that.
And hopefully we'll be around. The full Cameo in the show notes.
I look forward to Lindsay's already had your birthday, right? Recently. I think we sent you a
No. Lindsay's is coming up. We might be lighting up the phone.
I'm doing the for her birthday. Hands.
Are you living in the backwards society where what calendar direction are you on right now?
I'm doing Mac the Julian the, calendar. I'm using the Julian calendar, not the Gregorian calendar.
Mac is in the tenant calendar. He's going backwards. He's in the
using the Mayan
timeline.
Calendar that has 50 months, I believe, 50 months of 5 days each.
That's right. So in that context, it was just my birthday.
It was just your birthday.
Yeah.
It's really hard to find shoebox greetings cards for the Mayan calendar. That part of the Walgreens, not really well developed. All right. Well, thanks for listening to that mirth and merriment. But since Lindsay, we had, you know, we thought really appropriate for you joining, we would have a guest on that sort of comes from sort of the scope of work you've been working on, which is the marketing and public relations element of, you know, the store. You not only work for Imagine MKE, but you're also trying to facilitate for this sector. What is a new story we want to tell about ourselves? And that's how we came across Bryce Lord.
Yeah, we were really glad to welcome Bryce because he recently showed up for one of my work groups. And we get really excited when we see new faces in those rooms, see new folks that are interested in engaging in the work. And so we wanted to have Bryce on to hear a little bit more of his perspective as a leader in nonprofit education in Milwaukee, as someone who's had a long career as a performer and an administrator in the arts world, and someone who's bought in, who gets the work and is actively a part of it now. So this is a great opportunity to learn a little bit more about him.
Right. So after the break, we're going to meet Bryce Lord. But before then, let me give you a quick bio. He's had a diverse and storied path. In high school, he actually spent a year abroad in Chiang Mai, Thailand as a foreign exchange student. And that sort of inspired him to think about foreign service. And that actually led him to serve in the Navy for 8 years as a cryptologic linguist, focusing on Korean and Russian languages. So obviously you end up in Milwaukee in the arts as a result of that. He actually ended up, which he'll tell in a story, coming to Milwaukee, studying at UWM, and then ultimately working in the arts fields, not just as a performer, but also in operations and in administration of art. And now he is associate director of the Helen Bader Institute for Nonprofit Management at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. You'll be with us after the break.
I am Sam, Sam I am, that Sam I am, that Sam I am. I do not like that Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there?
Hey Bryce, like thank you so much for being here with us today.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, as all of us settle into what I'm sure will be a really wonderful conversation, wanted to kick things off with setting you in an arts and culture mindset by inviting you to think back to an early memory of an arts and culture experience that really stuck with you.
Gosh, there were several. We lived in a very small farming community that surprisingly the school system really focused on arts, which was really kind of fascinating if you look back on it. But I think the very first exposure I had was like in second grade. You know, we did a little skit of Hansel and Gretel, and I got to play Hansel, and I got to push
Katie. Got the lead. You got the lead.
I got to push Katie Pavlicek. Yeah. I got to push Katie Pavlicek into a cardboard box oven as the witch, and in front of my other classmates, and the spark was lit, and it kind of, that's where it all started, I think.
But how did you become cast? I mean, I know we're kind of joking about it, but did you raise your hand, or did your teacher?
It was kind of that, but I also, looking back, you know, a couple of years later, all of the kids were sort of the advanced learners, I think, that could take on an additional project. And so they gave us that to keep us busy, sort of. So when they were doing other things, they're like, okay, you six, you go over there and work on that thing. So that's kind of where it started. So.
And what community was that? What farming?
This was in Edgerton, Wisconsin, South Central, south of Madison.
Oh, wow. Wow. So yeah.
Yay tobacco days for Edgerton, Wisconsin.
Name checking there. I think we just boosted our pod audience in Edgerton. Yeah. So just a little bit, just a boost. Well, yeah. I mean, Bryce, like your career, you know, we took you from second grade. Now we take you to 2021, which was really fast forward, but your career has spanned being an artist and being an arts administrator. And now your role at Helen Bader Institute for Nonprofits, you're almost like an educator, if you will, right? Or at least supporting the education of folks, that right? Counts. To learn how to be effective nonprofit admins beyond the arts. So you've got this really fascinating span. Would that second grader would have foresaw that? Like, how would you have described the journey if you could have gone back in time? Like, this is what's going to happen.
I would have had no idea. I mean, I've gone so many paths. It's just kind of interesting that it ends up where it has. To me, that's one of the fascinating things to talk to people about, is find out, how did you get where you are? Because it's never where you plan.
Yeah.
You know, at one point I was going to be an architect. Another point I was going to go into the Foreign Service, and just kind of chose a passion by pursuing the arts and looking at acting and directing, and then kind of segueing, you know, as those opportunities diminished, moving into arts administration and leading me here. But, you know, looking back, I would have had no idea of where I would end up, which I think is part of the fun of it, you know?
Yeah. So was there like a mantra to sustain yourself as you went on this sort of journey that was ambiguous, right? That didn't necessarily have, like, the guidance counselor at the farming community school probably wouldn't have pointed, this is what's going to be like, where did you look towards as you studied?
I will tell you, I went into my guidance counselor in high school and said, I need help kind of finding a college and finding a path and figuring that out. And this will give you an idea of what it was like all those years ago. She looked at my grades, thought for a moment, and said, oh, you'll do fine. You don't need college.
Mm.
And so I was kind of left completely stunned, because I'd been told, this is what you do. And found that, okay, I'm on my own. I get to figure this out. And without that kind of guidance or assistance, and ended up actually going into the Navy for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that while in the military is where I kind of really locked into the love of acting. Oh. Because believe it or not, a lot of military bases have really strong sort of, I would call them just activities, different types of programs that you know, because you got to do something when you're stuck in Turkey somewhere.
Almost like a rec center, right? Right, exactly. Like lots of programming, right? There's lots of things that they have to do, right? Yeah.
And I was in South Korea for a year, and that particular army base, even though I was in the Navy, it's a long story, had a really great little theater company. And I jumped in and just thought, I like this, and I'm not too bad at it. Let's do more of this and just see where it goes. And so that followed me for the rest of my time in the service. And then when it was time to move on, I thought, okay, let's do this more and just kind of see where this takes me. And got my undergraduate here at UWM, actually, and just thought, this speaks to me in a way that, you know, a lot of the other things that I had thought about doing didn't. And so that's kind of where that whole track began.
That's not on the commercials for the armed forces. You're going to learn to be a great actor. You're going to be a great actor.
Yeah. Surprisingly, it's not.
It's not. They're highlighting the other elements of it. Wow. That's awesome.
Hmm. So as you then transitioned out of military life and into civilian life here in Milwaukee, what was that transition of getting into the theater scene here? What was it like at the time? Like, what were the opportunities and how did you start to plug in?
Well, it's interesting that I'm from the Fox Valley area. And when I got out of the service, went back home there, kind of fumbled my way around for a couple of years and was working on a theater project and had someone from Milwaukee say, you should think about coming down here. There's more opportunities. There's, you know, it's a bigger, more thriving art scene. And eventually that's what happened. And so I moved down here specifically for more opportunity. Without a real, you know, like career path. I just thought, I need to do something different. Let's come down here. Never having ever thought of moving to Milwaukee in my life. Mm. It was, you know, I always say it was just growing up in Wisconsin. It was kind of the big dirty city that you drove through to get to somewhere else, you know? But I've been here now full time for 24 years, and I love it more every year because it has so much to offer. Mm. Not just in terms of the arts, which it's a huge thriving community here, but everything else. It's like, I always say, it's everything that a big city has, but on a more manageable scale. And, you know, I love it.
So, you've been an artist yourself as an actor. Mm-hmm. You've also worked for a couple of arts organizations and admin roles, right? Such as audience management or audience relations, right. And yes. Also operations, right? Of yep. How they do things, and so now you've been an intersection of arts, culture, and nonprofits, right? Because that's how they function, right? These have all been nonprofit orgs. And what do you think is unique about that intersection of arts and culture and nonprofits? Versus, you know, I worked in nonprofits and youth development, or I've worked in nonprofits and civic engagement. What is unique that you'd sort of see? Because now working at the Helen Bader Institute, you probably get to see all sorts of nonprofits.
Much broader perspective.
What would be your reaction to that?
Fascinating. I mean, I think in many ways, what I struggle with is that, you know, arts organizations have differences. They have this sort of two-headed leadership program where you have the artistic director, the conductor, the curator that helps to maintain the artistic purity of the mission. Mm. And at least in Wisconsin, there's not as much of a turnout in terms of donations. And so there's sort of a heavier reliance on fees and tickets and things mm-hmm. than there are in other states around the country. Mm-hmm. But what I struggle with is that in many other ways, they're pretty similar. Mm. And yet that doesn't seem to be the mindset. I mm-hmm. can't tell you how many different times I hear arts people say, oh, arts organizations are different.
Mm.
And so we look at marketing different. We look at program evaluation different. And yet I can't get anybody to tell me how it's different. They tell me what they do. And I'm like, but there's a social service organization here that's doing it this way too.
Yeah.
And perhaps arguably a little better than you are. And so it's a struggle from the perspective of the Institute and kind of the goal of reaching out to all organizations, regardless of mission, to get arts organizations, I would say, on board with what they do, because they see if it's not arts specific, they just don't seem very interested. We do have a couple of arts organizations that show up regularly. And I'm always just, you know, coming from my background, I'm always happy to see my friends.
Old friends. Oh, yeah, you're like, you get it. You all get it. I'm so glad you're here. Yeah, you're here.
And we're really thrilled with that, but I would love to see more. And we are gradually I've been there. I've been with the Institute about 10 years now, and I kind of made it my sort of personal mission to bring in the arts community a little bit more. And I think we're starting to see the fruits of that a little bit, but it is, it does get, just again, my personal bugaboo, it gets a little frustrating to see that self-separation that happens because of that. I think there's always, you know, one, more heads are better than one. And, you know, I think for an arts organization to say that, you know, this organization that deals with homelessness or food deserts, there's nothing we can learn from them. And I think that that is really, really limiting and really frustrating. So that's, I mean, that's what I see happening in Milwaukee and frankly around the state and probably further afield than that. But it does get it, you know, like I say, I think arts organizations do have differences. Yes, that's true. But I think when you look at sector wide, it's all of the similarities that bring us together and make us a stronger voice in the overall community. And arts organizations tend to have a lot more visibility just because of the nature of the work. And so, you know, part of what I always look at is how can we help each other in that way? You know,
I think what's interesting and what that lifts up is this sort of sense of arts organizations seeing themselves as maybe having one foot in being a social service organization in that sort of nonprofit sphere and one foot in needing to sell a product in a slightly more capitalist way. And how that influences their marketing is interesting.
No, I agree. I think that there are, but I guess my point is that, yes, it is. It's hard to quantify the arts. It's also hard to quantify social services. You know, you look at tickets sold versus meals served, and you can look at those numbers, but what does that mean in terms of overall community impact? And and both organizations struggle with those same definitions, trying to struggle with how do you get to those definitions? And I don't think people consider that because, you know, the arts have a very important role in our community. They're, you know, they're meant to lift up, they're meant to reflect, they're meant to influence. And how do you compare that and sort of quantifying that to quantifying the basic, what we might call the basic needs, food, shelter, and so on? I would argue that the arts are a basic need also, because they make the struggle easier. In some cases, they make the struggle more manageable, and accessible in some ways. And so I would consider the arts a basic need as well. So how do we shift that mindset? And how do we kind of connect all of those pieces into the same end result?
Yeah, Bryce, it's fascinating that when you lift that up, you're reminding me of a, you know, sort of a rhetorical thing we're always, we're sort of examining, at least David and I examine or think about, is this notion of arts. One mental model of arts is it's on this pedestal that's white and it's got a shining light on it. I needed a ticket to go see it. There's a placard next to it that explains to me what it means. And there's lots of different gates I had to get into it.
Exactly.
And for folks in some folks in Milwaukee, that is a very live definition.
Well, and that's not just, I would say that's not just Milwaukee.
Well, not just Milwaukee, but
all, absolutely.
Yeah, right. And what you're describing is actually the opposite. You're describing air and water and sun. Like we need access to those things in order to thrive and survive. And that's, and I would probably hold that's what Imagine is trying to be on that end of the spectrum. That it isn't this, it's limited for a special audience. And of course there's excellence. There's a fine skill. There's no doubt that there's a craft, but in terms of what it really affects and means, we all have artistry in us, or we all have the capacity to connect with that. And that sounds like what you're speaking to is how to shift that mindset. So it isn't the sense of, it's always up for debate, you know, when we want to fund something or it's, you know, optional. I mean, it's like,
And one of the things about the Milwaukee arts community overall that I love is that it does really work to break, I think collectively, works to break down that sort of pedestal and make it more accessible to more communities, to more interests. And, you know, I love the fact that there is such a thriving, in terms of performance art, which again is, or performance, which is my background. There's such a thriving community of these small little storefront groups that are making and creating and writing their own art. They're not just all doing, you know, arsenic and old lace, you know, whatever.
The old money spinner at the end of the year. The money spinner at the end of the year.
They're all doing Christmas Carol or a version of, which is not to shame anybody that does.
Hands are up. Bryce's hands are up. He's like, hey, listen, I
totally get it.
I get it, right? We got to do it.
You know, but they are creating their own work. They're merging with other groups to create more interactive work. And, you know, I think of, again, growing up in Wisconsin and Milwaukee and the Rust Belt, and you don't expect to see all of that.
Well, I wanted to pivot to this notion of I'm glad we have somebody from a nonprofit, you know, the Nonprofit Institute, could nerd out a little bit more on it.
Yeah, like, well, that's me.
Well, again, both Lindsay and I have worked in nonprofits, you know, as long as we can remember, or as long as I can remember. So this is where the world, the industry, put those in quotes, that right. We know. And so, you know, one mental model that some of us hold is that in our current society, right, the role of nonprofits is to step in and address problems or dilemmas that the government can't solve, or the markets, right, our market system can't solve,
right,
or they're not currently addressing well. And so therefore, here come the nonprofits, kind of have to step into the breach, if you will.
Exactly, exactly.
Do that. And what does that mean for society's relationship for arts and culture then, right? Because to me, that sets up, that almost facilitates this unique, put it this way, if the market doesn't think it's art, is it art, right? It almost sets up in an implicit way.
Right.
You know, if this is so great, then how come a million people aren't watching it, which could be a really difficult thing, right? In the long, for allowing diversity of thought, for allowing unique programming to emerge that is relevant and even speaking to the margins of our groups, of Milwaukee, who need to be seen and heard. So and I don't know if you had a reaction to that or what you've seen.
No. I mean, the first thing that it makes me think of when you talk about sort of market failure or government failure, so that the nonprofit has a place, and especially in terms of art, I think, well, in terms of marketing or market and for profit, you've got television and movies and Broadway to a large degree. And there doesn't really seem to be, I mean, yes, there are sort of for-profit businesses that sell prints of paintings, but they're not creating their own work. And so it becomes this mass-produced, a group accessible product that, you know, quite frankly, if it's going to be profitable, it can't really stretch the imagination. It can entertain, but it doesn't really touch the edges of creativity and sort of expanding the mind and all of that. So, and that's where I think these nonprofit organizations that they worry about the bottom line, but they don't worry about, kind of in the same way, of how to turn it all around and make money off of it. And so there's more experimentation, there's more openness to creativity that way, which I think has always been the case, but I feel just personally in the last 10, 20 years of sort of America, it's needed that much more, you know? Because you look at TV and movies and Broadway, and they've become just so much more accessible, and they're, you know, we hold them in our hand literally every day if we want to. And yet there aren't platforms for some of this more innovative, more experimental, more challenging work. And so how do you get that message across unless you've got your own app? And that, again, you have to plan that so far in advance that it removes some of the fun out of it, I think. And so I think that's the real struggle right now, yeah. is how do you make it more immediate to make those sort of, like I say, the more challenging and more, the things that I find more interesting personally, how do you make them more immediate to an audience that's so used to just touching a button or two and seeing the latest episode of whatever sitcom with a laugh track and being told what it should be responding to and all of that, you know?
You know, what you said raises a couple things for me. I'm curious what you think about. To me, it seems that Milwaukee is a place that has an appetite for that sort of experimentation and innovation that you described.
I agree completely.
Curious.
I agree
completely. Yeah. What do you think? What's the vision coming out of this these pandemic times that elevates that's what we do here. That's what we do best. You know, how do we, I feel like it could be used as a pivot point. I wanted to think of a better word than pivot point.
No. I think I know exactly what you mean.
Like, what's the dream? How do we harness that?
You know, and I mean, energy. This is all just my personal opinion and observation. And
that's why we brought you on, Bryce. We wanted
you
the personal opinion out of
it. Take it or burn it or whatever you want. But I mean, I can honestly say I don't know that I've had a conversation with anybody in the last year that didn't ask this same type of question in a different format. Mm-hmm. What do we take from this past year with us as we move forward? Because it's been so challenging and so changing that we can't just all leave it behind and go back to what we were doing. We've learned a lot. And as much as everybody gripes about the virtual platform and, you know, you're on mute. I have a coffee cup that says you're on mute. You know, it seems to be like the catchphrase of the year, but I can't help but feel like there's something good in all of that. As we talk about the immediacy of and access. So my husband works for Milwaukee PBS, and they've been doing an excellent job of creating some documentary platforms and panel discussions where they'll have content for people to view on the spur of the moment. It is scheduled a couple of weeks out, but you know, you click that link and you're viewing something a little more challenging than the latest sitcom. And then you're having a conversation with community leaders talking about how that integrates to our daily life. And you're working through that all together. And so I think those kind of opportunities exist. There are theater companies now that are really looking at how do we do virtual performances and not make it television, you know, and still make that happen. So I think that there are ways that, as much as we're all learning to really gripe about Zoom and all of these other platforms, I think it's going to become a friend in the future and helping us to, I would be very, really fascinated to see visual artists embrace it and kind of experiment with it and see what they can do even after we go back to face-to-face to bring it into a more sort of immediate, broader community connection. I don't know. Those are just kind of...
Yeah, I wonder.
You know, we talk about things like this in education too. It's like, I just had several meetings today virtually. Mm-hmm. Like, what are we going to do in the fall? Are we going to be live? Are we going to be online? Are we going to be a mix? And how do we please everybody? Mm-hmm. You know, which you're never going to do regardless, but you want to try and get there as close as possible. But yeah, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No. I wonder, and maybe just the sort of virtual accessibility that you've been talking about is the answer to this question, but I wonder if you have any other musings on this from your perspective in nonprofit education and the arts and culture community here. Is there something you've seen over the years that you thought, wow, it'd be great if we could innovate in this way that hasn't happened yet, but that this sort of turning point could be a catalyst for, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I have a bugaboo of mine, and that is the advocacy piece. And so I was thrilled to learn about Imagine MKE. So, but it's not just, I mean, we lost our state association a couple of years ago. So we don't really have a statewide voice that's, you know, pounding desks and pointing to data and saying, this is what it is and this is what it needs to be. And I feel like one of the best opportunities for developing that is grassroots. And in terms of different communities pulling together to say, this is what we are doing, this is how it affects you, and you know, that sort of collective action, that collective voice. I've seen that happen here in Milwaukee. I've seen that sort of collective voice and, you know, picketing and petitions, and I've seen that make things happen. And I would love to see that on a broader statewide level, different communities really banding together and speaking for themselves. And instead of, and this applies not just to the arts, but nonprofit in general, to kind of really pull together and in some ways demand the respect that they're due. And really saying, we do this and we do this really well. And you don't realize how often you are touched by a nonprofit during the course of your day. And to see that happen, I think would make me very happy. You know? It would certainly make my job a little easier, but you know, there's that.
You know, Bryce, as you were talking, like what are the lessons learned, perhaps, that arts orgs, or either what's coming up for me, and I wonder how it resonates with you. And it just sort of you just amplified it in this notion of like the voice of grassroots, the voice of people, is that relationships really do matter. And for example, what I'm sort of discerning is, it's not that like theater companies or performing arts companies, we'll just talk, could be like the symphony, it's not like they're using necessarily Zoom to have to do a show that gets so many people. They're trying to keep Zoom just to keep their people intact, right? Like, you still matter. We're still here. You know, we need you to come here. And there's something perhaps that to go to that is, how do you really connect with your audience? And I know I'm trying to be very specific, not so it doesn't go to platitudes, but it's not just connect with your audience in terms of the excellence of how you perform Franny and Zodi necessarily or something.
Right.
But how your audience really does feel present in however you carry out your work somehow. Right. And that would reflect in its communications, that would reflect in the types of programming you do. It also would reflect in the types of alignments and partnerships you're forming, absolutely, right? Because they're more meaningful as opposed to, and this, you know, Lindsay, you've worked in, you know, you've worked for orchestras. You've seen what outreach is authentic, and you've seen outreach as almost tokenistic, right? There's a spectrum, and you know, it feels icky. What's in the, we're kind of doing a stunt,
that's right,
to show we're doing versus, oh, wow, we're really, you know, we're showing that this institution, this arts and cultural institution, really is trying to speak to and reflect the lives of all Milwaukee, or at least the people that might not be seen before. And I wonder if that's the real to go, is how do you, as opposed to trust us, we're good at our art, or trust us, we're good at this thing, and right, keep paying us to do this high quality thing, where maybe, you know, again, it's not, and I'll pause here. Sometimes I wonder, is audience development trying to convince the audience that this should be developed? Or is audience development trying to change the institution to really look like and reflect what the rest of the city really wants?
Right, right. And I'm not saying that necessarily a virtual environment or a virtual community is a replacement.
Oh, no, no, right, right.
But I think, you know, because trust me, there's nothing like
sitting live
audience or... Yeah. So, but I think it's another option that's out there that I really look forward to seeing how it integrates more completely into our lives. I mean, we've all seen how it works with business and education, but I feel like, and again, talking to the different arts leaders that I have over the last year, there's a fear of it because everybody says nothing beats a live performance, which is true. But isn't this an amazing opportunity to experiment?
It doesn't have to be zero sum, right? It doesn't have to erase the live experience. It augments.
Exactly. It's a new version that you have that is, you know, reasonably affordable, accessible. And is becoming more of a norm, at least this year. You know, we'll see again where it goes, but how cool is that opportunity? And so I'm encouraged to see that there are, that is happening.
Yeah.
I'd like, just like to see where it goes.
From your perspective, working with students, what do you think are some of their perspectives on how they're seeing this turning point? Like students that are looking to enter into the field new as young mm-hmm. folks, where are their heads at in terms of recovery?
It's interesting
because,
you know, part of the challenge that the university is facing is how do we meet the students where they are most comfortable being met? And of course, everybody is still really locked into face-to-face classrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, initially when this all happened last spring, everybody's like, no, I'm never taking another online class again. But now that they've done it a couple times, they're like, oh, this isn't so bad. This is another option. My boss is one of those instructors that said, never will I do technology and all of that. And now he's like, I really like this. This is really convenient. But I think in terms of how the people that are newer to the sector, there is a lot more flexibility. I think there's a lot more openness to kind of using platforms like this, partly because, again, you know, I'm dating myself, I know, but, you know, younger generations grow up with those phones in their hands and the iPads here and that sort of virtual environment. They're much more comfortable with it than I think we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. And so I have a feeling, like I say, some of this is going to be here to stay.
Well, I think I'll just say, you know, I came in the nonprofit field about 25 years ago, and I didn't even know there was a nonprofit field, right? Like,
right.
I joined AmeriCorps because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to make a difference in the world. I joined AmeriCorps, and then I kind of fell into it, right? And now it's a lot more evolved because now you have institutes for it. You get certificates for it. You can major in it. And it's just fascinating to me, right? Like this notion of all this. So which means there's probably more sophisticated folks coming in through, right? Wanting to make sure that if they're, and you're sort of experiencing them there, right?
Yes.
They're discerning, like, well, how am I going to go about this world and making sure, you know, my mission aligns with probably a lot more sophisticated than I did.
Interesting.
I came in 25 years ago.
Because we have several different community support programs where we have leadership circles for executive directors. We have different programs that are focusing on a broader statewide audience. And the things that we're hearing almost universally is, how do I engage my staff virtually to where they still feel like they're a part of something, that they're engaged, they're productive, that we're all on the same team, even though none of us are in the same location. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I hear them saying, oh, virtual really works. We don't necessarily have to have everybody in the office all the time. That could save us on rent. And this could be a new model from, you know, expanding our working from home, all of that. And so I do feel like there's going to be a shift in sort of that operational structure of an organization, regardless of mission. To try and, like I say, use what we've learned and not just brush it off to the side. So,
and then the question, of course, is how do we keep finding the humanity in our work, even if it retains some of its virtual nature?
Well, and I think too, I personally, what I see is that a virtual platform works better in sort of an administrative or operational capacity, not necessarily. You know, as you know, in spite of some of the things I've said earlier, it doesn't easily lend itself to the performance aspect. But I think that there are still ways that arts organizations can benefit from some of this to help, you know, to help reduce the bottom line, to help make things a little bit more effective and timely in how they operate and so on. So,
So Bryce, kind of taking a step back, bigger picture for a moment, I want to ask you to speak to your involvement in the arts scene in Milwaukee for nearly 40 years, as you have been, and your role at the Institute offers you this unique perspective on the nonprofit field at large here. And so on both on a city and a regional and a national level. And so I'm curious, from kind of that perspective, what makes Milwaukee unique? And then what's exciting you about Milwaukee right now? Where are we going? In what ways could we really push the envelope and lead?
I would say what is unique and what excites me are kind of the same thing. And again, understanding that my lens is primarily coming from performance. And I've mentioned it before, this sort of thriving underground arts community that, you know, we've got several universities in the area that have arts programs, that have acting and directing programs. And we have a lot of people that stay here. A lot of those artists don't go away. It's the Wisconsin idea. We're building our own communities in our universities, and these people need to work. Just, they have that creative passion. And so they're creating all of this fun stuff, these opportunities for themselves, and it's getting Milwaukee noticed. I was on a call earlier this week from somebody in Atlanta that said, oh, Milwaukee, they've got a great art scene, I've heard. I really look forward to visiting it sometime. And I'm like, what? Well, you're face, right, but how did you hear that? Right.
Our listeners can't hear it, but me and Lindsay's face was like, they said, what? They said, what?
Your eyes just went like, boing. But yeah, well, no, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and I've said this for years, that Milwaukee is sort of becoming the Minneapolis or the Seattle, mm-hmm. or, you know, kind of the next round of these really thriving communities, arts communities. And so to hear that was really encouraging. And because I've always felt like it's there, it just needs more attention and more nurturing. You know, I have a number of friends that are constantly just kind of doing their own thing, creating. There's, you know, basement theaters and storefront theaters, and they're creating new scripts. Not always good, but, you know, there's a growth opportunity there, you know. And the fact that there are audiences that follow them, and it's not just young people encouraging other young people. You've got all ranges that are in the seats. And I think that's so cool. And the opportunity that the Milwaukee arts scene has is whatever it wants it to be right now, as long as they take up the cause and do that. So,
well, Bryce, Lindsay and I have a really unique power, that we have the ability to make our guests the czar of arts and culture in the city. So we're going to build off that. It's obvious we've got a vision, but the downside, it only lasts as long as the end of the podcast episode. So we gotta act quick. So what's the first policy that you would pass to enact, you know, to really make what you just described that next level? What would be a policy you'd enact to facilitate that?
First policy would to be making sure that my powers last longer than this episode.
That's the I want five more wishes.
Exactly.
The loophole wish.
The loophole wish. Right. All right.
No, I mean, I think mostly I would love to see Milwaukee or Wisconsin. I mean, we have organizations like the Arts Board and that sort of support the arts, but I would really love to see something very in-depth and very focused on promoting Wisconsin arts beyond Wisconsin. And okay. Not just
externally.
Exactly.
You're saying, right.
Right. Because like I say, we've got this opportunity, I feel like this opportunity for growth, but what I see happening largely is promoting, say, Milwaukee arts to Milwaukee or Wisconsin arts to Wisconsin. And so the fact that people outside our organization, outside our communities, are hearing about it in their own way, in their own paths, means that there's an untapped opportunity there that we haven't explored. And so I would say, you know, we have tourism bureaus, and they're promoting Wisconsin's Northwoods to all over the country. Why aren't they promoting our arts as well? Or are they, and just not enough? So that's my policy.
You're like external, like not domestic, the opposite of domestic, abroad. You're trying to get the arts abroad strategy, the arts abroad initiative there, yes.
Why don't we have original Milwaukee rep performances on PBS? They're all over the country. Other theater companies do that. And I think The Rep certainly has the quality that would land well. And, you know, why aren't we doing things like that? And the Milwaukee Symphony, things like that.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting there, right. We're getting over our Midwestern nature to be a little too humble.
Our modesty, right?
And that's it. I say this all the time. In fact, in my own podcast, Nonprofits in Java, one of the questions I asked everybody is, what are you good at? Mm-hmm. What are you best at? Mm-hmm. Because, and every single person gets completely stumped. They're either like, oh, I've never really thought about that. Or thank you for making me think about that. Yeah. Because I find personally, people in the nonprofit sector suck at promoting themselves.
Yes.
They're too nice. They're too humble. It's about the work. And it's not about the fact that they're doing the work really well.
Yeah.
And so it's really about boosting up that promotion.
Speaking of boosting up that promotion, Bryce.
Yeah, I got my plug in. I saw the
tell
clock.
Us where, like, well, tell us where they can find it. Tell us where they can you find can you just, in the pod.
You can Google Nonprofits and Java. You can go to nonprofitsandjava.com. I'm on Spotify, wherever podcasts are found, you'll find me. But it's just my own little hobby that came out of this pandemic and missing sitting in a coffee shop with people that I connect with and talking shop and talking personal and just showcasing different things going on in the sector. It's pretty new, but it's fun. Keeps me off the streets, right?
Hey, Bryce, is it too on the nose to close out by asking you that question you ask your guests? What are you best at?
Ian, I've thought about this.
So. I'd hope so.
No. I learned this a long time ago. I actually went back when I was in the military that I'm really good at knowing my resources and knowing how to pull them together when I need to. If I'm ever the smartest person in the room, God help us all. But I want to make sure that I know who those smartest people are and then I can lean on them or call them in or find the answers if I don't have them. And so really that networking piece, I think, is what I think I'm pretty good at and what I enjoy. So, and so it's great to sit down here with all of you guys and just talk.
I appreciate, you know, Bryce, it sounds like in a sector, in a city that's pretty segregated and separated, we need weavers like yourself more than often, right? People weaving across that, and appreciate the work that you do, not just at the Institute, but also someone who works in our work groups and helping weave a larger story for that. And thanks so much for hanging out with us today. And we look forward to hearing the next episode of Nonprofits in Java, where you can find
out. Who knows, maybe somebody in this chat room will be on one of the episodes coming soon too.
Maybe, look at that teaser. A little bit of teaser.
So stay tuned.
Thanks so much, Bryce.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. A train, would you, could you want a train? Not in a train, not in a tree, not in a car, Sam, let me be. I would not, could not in a box, I would not, could not with a box. I noticed that Bryce has a better podcasting voice than I do. He's so smooth. Yeah, when he started talking to us, I thought, this is a man who needs to have a podcast. And indeed, indeed he does.
Yeah, as opposed to sort of my random screeching and sounds. All right. But authentically, it was really, really great to have him aboard because I think he does have such a unique perspective. And I think what we both share is an abundance perspective of possibility, you know, and I think it's really cool that given his work and scope, that he still sees the possibility and he sees it's around the corner that Milwaukee's going to get to this next level. So I think that's what I walked away from that conversation.
Yeah, and I appreciate that his arc of seeing how Milwaukee's arts and culture scene has grown over the past 30 something years affirmed our inclinations that there's this room for growth, there's this room for leaning further into experimentation, and so that inspires me to keep up this work. Yeah.
You know, Lindsay, you know who else inspires me?
Who, Mac?
Our listeners. That's you listening. Thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it and you'd like to help support the pod, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort, produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is part of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Be sure to listen to our fellow podcast, Black Imagination, as well as the back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE. Or if you're down with Zuckerberg's big blue platform, Facebook, go to Imagine MKE.
Thanks again, and we'll catch you next Tuesday.
This three-man
booth is going to take a while.
This stuff, by the way.
This three-man booth is going. This three-person booth is going to take a while, right? Like,
meanwhile, Barry Horowitz is looking over your shoulder, being like, "Come on, man,
you're a jabroni. You're totally I totally missed the spot.
What's wrong with you?
Let's just talk to my friend Dan, who's calling me right now. Let's just add him into the
Dan.